I'm going to have to desperately restrain myself from doing a Dutch accent at any given moment. And as Johan Cruyff would often say.
What an amazing comeback! You just cannot write scripts like this.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great final days within the game of football.
Ah, there we go.
I am Lewis, here once again with my co-host Adam.
That's the way to introduce it.
So for those that listened in last week, we're obviously taking a small detour away from great final games within the game of football to final days. So we're picking a iconic footballer and doing a deep dive into a little bit of their career, but especially how it ended. And I'm starting off with a very strong
very strong choice.
The one and only Johan Cruyff. So I said to add before the recording.
So you need a limit.
Yeah, I need to restrain my Dutch accent impersonation as much as possible. So yeah, it's Johan Cruyff. And I think a lot of people will be surprised because if you obviously know who Johan Cruyff is, but a cursory glance and an overview of his career, you think, oh, Ajax, Barcelona, Ajax, like all great. But obviously he retires really early in terms of internationally, he retires early from playing, but we'll get into all that detail. But hopefully this will be fun and educational.
What a sales pitch.
So with that, following the format that you created last week, Addy, we're going to start with a couple of unknowns just to kind of whet the whistle.
Hit me.
So one of the unknowns is that he retired early, as I mentioned, at just 31 years old.
Wow.
He decided that he was going to stop football. But he did have to come back, and this is where we kind of pick up the report. So
right.
He comes back due to bankruptcy, and then he later admitted that it was a mistake to retire so young.
Yeah.
So his bankruptcy came from, I don't know if you know about this, his pig farming. He invested heavily, all of his money into pig farming.
I mean, why would I know about that?
Why would you not? You don't know about Johan Cruyff's pig farm?
No, I didn't even know he was in the slightest interested. Did Michael Owen get him on it?
Well, it's very much a Michael Owen-esque kind of cryptocurrency encouragement where it's right. Like, hey, get involved in this thing. There's no way you can lose. Turns out you can lose. It was far from kosher. And yeah, basically, Johan Cruyff invests all of his spare money, all of his kind of earnings over the course of a career, especially into pig farming. And it's a bit of a scam. He goes bankrupt and he realizes he has to return to.
How do you scam with pig farming? Is it like, were the pigs not there? Were they not pigs?
That's a great idea. I love the idea that it's just a dog farm. It's kennels. They just dressed up. They just shaved them before Johan got there. Johan's coming quick. Get the clippers.
What's the great scam there? How did he fall for it? I want details on that.
maybe he didn't even visit it. Maybe just somebody said, oh, I've got a pig farm in. Do you know what? There's going to be a pork boom in the next 10 years. Get involved early. Get in on the ground floor, Johan. But nevertheless, it bankrupted him and he was forced to come out of retirement, which is amazing considering what we're about to talk about, that this wouldn't have happened if he hadn't have lost his money. Yeah. So when he came back, we'll touch on this a bit more, but he went to the NASL, the North American Soccer League, or MLS as we would call it now.
He went there, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where he went to get his money, which ironically, we spoke about Beckham last week, kind of earning a bumper contract and the merchandising and everything came from it.
Yeah.
Even 20 years earlier, it had still been the case. So,
well, it was a bit of a thing then, wasn't it?
Because exactly.
Beckham went there, Pelé went there, there's a few that went.
I think even Best played there for a little
bit. That's right, yeah. They tried to essentially get players that had gone into retirement.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they did with Cruyff. So he went to the Los Angeles Aztecs and played for them. Then for the Washington Diplomats. And then this, like, I would like to say, first of all, terrible names.
It is Aztecs and Washington Diplomats. What's awful, that about?
Awful. But this, I had no idea this happened, and this blew my mind. I'm somewhat of a Cruyff fanboy. I'm sure that's come across in this podcast over the years. But I had no idea that he went back to Spain, to Levante, in the second division.
So after this?
Yeah. So he does two stints for the American teams, and then he goes back to Levante, who are a second division Spanish team. He only plays 10 games for them because he falls out with the managers, which is not unusual for Cruyff, and we'll talk about that a lot today. But yeah, amazingly, he only featured 10 games, but then he came back to the Washington Diplomats for one more season. So he's kind of in the wilderness at this point, a little bit like we talk about people going to MLS now, even though that league has come on a lot since Beckham's time. It very much was the footballing graveyard.
Yeah.
And Cruyff decides to come back. So We'll talk about that more in a little bit, but one of the other unknowns is that in 1959, Cruyff's father died from a heart attack, and his father's death had a major impact on his mentality. Cruyff recalled in celebration of his 50th birthday, "My father died when I was just 12 and he was 45. From that day, the feeling crept stronger over me that I would die at the same age. Oh. I was convinced this would happen. And then when I had a serious heart problem when I reached 45, I thought, this is it. Only medical science, which was not available to help my father, kept me alive."
Wow.
So he had this sense of impending doom. He was convinced he was going to die, which I think probably lent itself to his attitude of just saying what he thought, not wasting time with people that he considered idiots.
Right.
And it kind of, I think, that obviously the death of his father at a young age gave him that sense of, no, I'm just going to do what I want. Life's too short. And he basically doubles down on that.
I mean, it's a good license to be a knob, isn't
it? Yeah, sure. Nobody can question it.
Yeah.
Johan, why are you like this? Well, of course, you know, when I was a young boy, and you kind of just go, yeah, fair enough. You kind of get a pass. No one's going to try and argue with him too much. And then one of the other unknowns is that he managed the Catalan national team in a series of unofficially sanctioned matches because Catalan not recognised by UEFA or FIFA.
Yeah.
So a lot of, obviously, a lot of Spanish players, a few French players, even Hristo Stoichkov represented the Catalan national team despite being Bulgarian.
How does that work?
He basically was a naturalized Catalonian because he played in Barcelona. But nevertheless, they beat Argentina 4-2 and Honduras 4-0 in two of the matches that he
actual
managed.
Argentina or fake
actual Argentina?
No way.
Yeah. He pulled it off. Honduras, they beat 4-0, which you'd expect. And then there were two draws against Nigeria and Tunisia, less glamorous.
Wow.
But obviously, it's not the Spanish national team. It is only people that can represent Catalonia.
Yeah, yeah.
So for them not being recognised, they're not official FIFA matches. But I thought it was interesting that Johan Cruyff, the Dutch master, was actually...
He loves it, though.
Yeah, he identified it in a strong way, a lot more as being Catalonian or Spanish than he did Dutch. You read that quote when we were talking about the Spain 2010 World Cup, I think.
Yeah.
Talking about the fact that Cruyff turned his back on Holland because they weren't playing good enough football.
That's right, yeah.
And he kind of took over and kind of said, no, I want Spain to win because of that.
Yeah.
So away from those unknowns, just to give you a bit of an idea of the first episode. So again, we're trying to not give you a whole career breakdown of these players, but I want to talk first of all about his first stint at Ajax. So he gets signed by Ajax at the age of 10 years old. And this is what we were talking about last week with Hollywood scripts. Somebody literally sees him in a playground and goes, this guy is far better than all the other kids.
Yeah.
So signs him to an Ajax youth contract without first offering him a formal trial. So there and then.
That's the dream though, isn't it?
Yeah, you're literally playing
jumpers
and goalposts.
Do you ever have that when you're playing in the park and you see an old boy walk past? I mean, unfortunately, in the cynicism of now, you probably think something different. But certainly when I was a kid, an old boy walked past, everybody was like, play a bit better.
Yeah.
It could be a scout.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a genuine scout feeling.
The idea that they were just walking around.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah,
just walking his dog, yeah.
It's probably not, but what if it is? It's probably not, but what if it is? But yeah, like you say, that actually happened to Johan Cruyff. So he gets signed by Ajax, and then he goes on to represent them for 10 years. He is Mr. Ajax. They win 3 European Cups in a row, and they are the dominant force of European football for a long time. He obviously does what he does on the national stage as well.
Yeah.
Against Sweden, Cruyff produced the move that defined his talents. It took a couple of seconds to lose the defender, but we've been talking about the Cruyff turn ever since.
I never did on the training or in free times tricks. I never did tricks. I saw something and I did it, and it just came out. There was an opponent there and you had to outplay him. So that was the easiest way, so you just do it.
Especially in 74, getting to the final and losing. But after 10 seasons, he was stripped of his captaincy and forced out of all tactical discussions by the Ajax hierarchy. A lot of this comes back to the fact that he was quite a difficult person.
Well, that doesn't happen unless you're a problem causer.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so difficult with Cruyff because everyone basically says, he was a bit of a bastard, but he was also the greatest player in the world.
Yeah.
So, to a degree, it's a bit like Cristiano Ronaldo being able to make his own demands, and it's the idea of player power. So, apparently, Cruyff, even as a player, and obviously he goes on to become an incredible manager, so he had the tactical brain, but would be overruling managers' decisions, would be taking players aside, telling them to disregard what the coach has said and to actually do this.
Yeah.
So, he was very heavily involved, very interfering as a player, and would literally invite himself into coaches' meetings. The manager and the coaches would be in the
boot
room.
You can believe it, though, can't you? That's the thing, yeah.
But he had the ability, and ultimately, he's kind of proved right because what we'll talk about today, but also his managerial career, he was a serial winner. He was brilliant for Ajax, brilliant for Barcelona, arguably with Rinus Michels, helped create modern football.
Yeah.
He was spectacular, but nevertheless, after 10 seasons, stripped of the captaincy, and he kind of left Ajax under a cloud, despite having propelled them to probably the highest they've ever been in world football.
Yeah.
So after that, he goes to Barcelona and is there for a season before the 74 World Cup, and he helps them win their first La Liga title in 14 years.
Wow.
So, again, it's important to know that this isn't the Barcelona of the 2010s. This is a struggling Barcelona team. Yeah. You know, in the top four or five Spanish teams, but very much the kind of perennial underachievers. But Cruyff helped get them over the line.
The Tottenham of the Spanish football.
Yeah, I'm sure both Barcelona are happy with that, and any Tottenham fan, even though it was an insult, any Tottenham fans going, Barcelona and us, in the same sentence, I'll take it.
I don't know where I get off as an Everton fan saying that kind of thing. But
it's because you're an Everton fan, you can say it. What are they going to say back to you?
I don't care.
Exactly.
We're probably going down.
Yeah. Oh, what a crying shame. Oh, gosh. But back to Cruyff.
Sorry.
They also won a Spanish Cup with his time at Barcelona. But yeah, ultimately, a bit like Beckham at Real Madrid, he didn't have the silverware-laden kind of career you would have thought at a club as big as Barcelona.
Yeah.
He went then after his Barcelona. This is when he goes to the LA Aztecs, to the Washington Diplomats, to Levante, to Washington.
Right.
So he's basically retired from football at this point. He takes a year or two off, realizes.
What year is this ish?
This was back in 1979.
Right, cool.
So he goes to LA. So he has like a season off and he kind of loses all of his money.
Yeah.
He goes to LA for 1979, Washington Diplomats 1980 and 81, with Levante in the middle of that. But then he comes back to Ajax. Everything is forgiven. So despite the fact that he'd retired at 31, he goes back at about 34 years of age back to Ajax and he joins them. He wins the league with them because, of course, he does. He's Johan Cruyff.
Yeah.
He spends two seasons back at Ajax, which teases up for the final episode that I want to talk about today.
Yeah.
So with that, let's talk about the way that he bowed out.
Villa. And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! Amazing goal by Ricky Villa!
So, May 16th, 1983, Ajax win the second leg of the Dutch Cup final 3-1 to seal a League and Cup double. So he's gone back to Ajax, League and Cup in the bag.
Yep.
He's 36 years old at this point, and Cruyff had scored the third goal in that win. So Cruyff believes he's secured his future at the club. It's his second spell. He's returned from Nazl, and he wants one more year. He's decided he's got one more season left in him. His legs are starting to fail him, but he's just helped and scored. He's helped them secure a League and Cup double in his second season back at the club.
Am I right in saying, or assuming, that the Dutch league is a bit Scotland?
No, not at this point, because you have teams like PSV Eindhoven, Ajax winning European Cups, winning, what do they call it, the Super Cup, winning the Cup.
But still, you're
Cup.
Talking two or three teams couldn't test the league.
You've basically got four. You've got four in Holland, which we'll touch on. So you've got
Feyenoord.
You've got Ajax.
Eindhoven.
PSV Eindhoven. And then the other one, I don't think you'd...
Maybe. It must be Rotterdam.
It's not, but always a lovely mention.
I love that song.
Is that beautiful sound?
It is, mate. Yes. Yeah, very good.
That's, there you go. That's a deep niche pull. We are making our listeners of 50 years and older happy. This could be Rotterdam or anywhere, Liverpool or Rome, because Rotterdam is anywhere alone. Anywhere alone.
Oh, mate.
Well, no,
necessary jab.
Sorry there, mate. No, you're not quite that old, quite.
Thank you.
But the other team is AZ Alkmaar, who are domestically a good team as well. And again, so you've got kind of these teams winning Super Cups, European Cup Winners' Cups. The league in general is a much higher standard than it is nowadays.
Yep.
But you are right. But it kind of been spread over the last 10 years. Feyenoord hadn't won a league in about 10 years, so you've got kind of Ajax, AZ and PSV all kind of sharing it around. I think Ajax win it 5 out of 10.
Okay.
So Ajax are the dominant force, but it's not a Bayern Munich at the moment. It's not a Juventus that just win 8, 9, 10 in a row.
Yeah.
So it's slightly more competitive with that. So Cruyff believes he's done enough to seal his final year in professional football at 37 years of age at Ajax. However, Ajax have a different idea. Because he's on such high wages, they say, thanks very much for your service, Johan, but you won't be needed anymore.
Wow.
Which you can imagine, he didn't take well.
No.
So he thought he would have his final contract there, and he turned around to Aart de Moos, who was the Ajax manager at the time, and he said, and I'll do this in a Dutch accent, because...
Oh, you haven't done it yet, have you?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to join another club. I do not tell you which one, and I will cause you problems. So that is what he says. He threatens the Ajax manager and he kind of tantalizingly says, okay, I'm going to join another club. Not telling you who, but it's going to cause
in the Dutch
problems.
League.
In the Dutch league. Wow. So this is what a lot of people may not realize about Johan Cruyff. So right at the end of his career, his final season, he decides to stick two fingers up at Ajax and he joins their rivals, Feyenoord. Now, Feyenoord are the fourth best team in this league. Yeah. AZ Alkmaar, PSV, Ajax are the people that share the league round, and very occasionally there'll be a cup win for Feyenoord. Yeah. So that's kind of it.
Right.
They are the bitter rivals at Feyenoord. And for people that don't know, this is a genuine, genuine rivalry where you've got nail bombs that were set off and thrown at different fans. Really horrific. Burning effigies of each other and other players. This is the equivalent of, I don't know, Lionel Messi, when he left Barcelona instead of joining Paris Saint-Germain, going to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
This is Figo leaving Barcelona for Real Madrid.
I mean,
on steroids. Sure, yeah, Judas Campbell. Yeah, we'll go there. But even more severe, if you can believe it, because it's Johan Cruyff.
Of course.
He is formerly the greatest player in the world. Three Ballon d'Ors.
Well, formerly the greatest player in Ajax's history.
Yeah, exactly. This is Mr. Ajax.
Was he quite public about it being a bitter thing?
Yes, he was, because he wanted to throw Ajax under the bus. He was prone to a bit of bitterness and pettiness over his years.
He does come across that way. I just wonder if he did it publicly.
Yeah, he goes very public. And there's a few times we'll talk about today, is a few times he uses the kind of the media to his advantage, or at least to just say what he's feeling.
Okay.
So I think a lot like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, where he constantly is looking for something personal to be like, I had to create drama or a reason. He takes it so personally.
Oh, so that's how you're going to play it. You're going to do this? Okay, fine. That's all I needed. That's all I needed for him to do that. And it became personal with me.
So he joins Feyenoord. And it's strange because when you see the unveiling, there's footage of it on YouTube. The chairman of Feyenoord is a bit nervous and anxious, and the Feyenoord fans created huge banners that said Feyenoord forever, Cruyff never. So they were not, despite the fact it's Johan Cruyff, obviously he's towards the end of his career anyway, he's not the player he was, but a lot of the Feyenoord fans are not happy with this either.
Right,
yeah.
Wow.
So he's left in this kind of wilderness where it's like, well, Ajax fans are now turning against him.
Yeah.
Feyenoord fans don't particularly want him because he represents everything about their biggest rivals. But he was ultra-competitive and he never feared to speak his mind. So 8 games into the season, the two teams would meet for the first time. You'd have Ajax at top of the league, Feyenoord a second. So Cruyff has done well, but Feyenoord aren't playing good football at this point in time. They're getting wins, but very functional. Cruyff, his legs are starting to betray him and people are saying already that Feyenoord are just going to falter because they're basically playing with 10 men because Cruyff can't defend. He can't.
I mean, in that day and age, that was a very old player.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not players like nowadays with the, you know, science and sports science, all the rest of it. This is a 37-year-old bloke who should be 4 or 5 years into retirement.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. It's a really cool one because nowadays, like, people like Zlatan play until he's 40 and people like that. You are right. It is very much the exception that proves the rule for this one. But 5 minutes in, into the Der Klassiker, as they call it in Holland, Cruyff loses the ball on the edge of his area whilst trying to dribble out past the Ajax players, and Ajax take the lead 1-0. So it's Cruyff that is at fault for the opening goal. Ajax would go on to win with a record that stands to this day of an 8-2 victory, with a young Marco van Basten scoring a hat-trick for Ajax.
Wow.
So Cruyff gets embarrassed. 8 games in, first v second, maybe Feyenoord can do it, and they get turned over.
Wow.
In the immediate aftermath of this, Johan Cruyff walked from player to player, promising them that they would win the league. So in the aftermath of an 8-2 loss to their bitter rivals, the team that have won 5 out of the last 10 leagues, he goes from player to player, and he tells them, we are going to win this league. And apparently a lot of players kind of laughed him off or just wanted to ignore him, thinking he was a bit of a traitor. Like, don't come and tell us what we're going to do when you've just joined this team, joined us from the team that have just battered us. And apparently his exact quote was, just you wait. At the end of these 34 games, just you see. So Cruyff was helping to shepherd a very young team. This final team had a lot of promise, but it was a little bit class of 92 in terms of you don't win anything with kids.
Yeah.
A lot of talent, but all of them unproven, including a 21-year-old Ruud Gullit, who would be absolutely instrumental in this final team.
Right, nice.
So he goes on to basically, to spoil it, Ruud Gullit gets a Players Player of the Year win at the end of the season.
Right.
Incredible kind of breakthrough season underneath Cruyff's stewardship.
Yep.
So after this loss, Feyenoord were galvanised. So this is where Cruyff starting to interfere actually helps a team like Feyenoord, because he is bigger than the club at this point in time.
Yeah.
So Cruyff this is where him interfering, where he is actually bigger than the club, is actually quite helpful. He started to get involved in tactics. He started to help the manager in making decisions.
Right.
And basically, Cruyff apparently takes it upon himself to take a part-time player, a young guy called Stanley Brad, who was a left winger, part-time contract. He only trained twice a week, and he was a PE teacher the other time.
Right.
Cruyff saw in him an unbelievable engine, a player that would not stop running. And because he was left-sided, which is where Cruyff liked to occupy, he basically went up to the final manager and told him to start Stanley Brad, to bring him in on a full time contract, and to start him at left-back because he wouldn't stop running, and that would counter for the fact that Cruyff couldn't defend from the front anymore.
No way.
The manager goes with it. So they bring in this part-time player who'd barely played for Feyenoord, and he was a PE teacher, and he converted him from a left-winger to a left-back. And this is what changes everything for Feyenoord.
No way.
So absolutely incredible.
How's that not a film? That's
incredible. Yeah, it is amazing. So the Stanley Brad has Johan Cruyff to thank for everything. Yeah. He went on to have a great career. And it all comes because basically he wouldn't stop running. He just was the Dirk Kuyt of his day.
Well, I was going to say he's the you. You're Stanley
Thank
Brad,
you very
mate.
Much. I'll actually take that.
Well, once upon a time.
Yeah, those days are long gone. I tell you what, he's a terrible footballer, but he loves running. Look at him go. He covers every blade of grass because his first touch is terrible. So after that 8-2 humiliation, Feyenoord were galvanised. They went on a 15-match unbeaten run that took them top of the league before a loss to Groningen saw them nervous before hosting Ajax the next week. So they'd gone on this 15-game unbeaten run in the league.
Big game.
Yeah, exactly. And they lost to Groningen, which was a surprise, and then they're up against Ajax. So certainly that game, the 8-2 thrashing in their mind, they just... If you'd kind of been on that unbeaten run, you're facing them, but the Groningen kind of put a bit of doubt into their mind. And a lot of people were talking about a similar, I don't want to bag on them for any particular reason, but that kind of old school Arsenal mentality where it's like, you're great when it doesn't matter, but when it comes down to the crunch, are you going to hit the self-destruct button?
Yeah.
Are you going to bottle it? Are you going to Spurs or Tottenham it up?
Yeah.
And so the final fans were incredibly nervous about this, but they had no reason to be. They were in an uncompromising mood and had other plans. Hullet opens the scoring with a fantastic free kick, and then Cruyff blasts home another goal from close range, where they would go on to win in the 4-1 victory with Jan Molby, good old mention for him, snatching the only goal for Ajax. And it was a result that confirmed Feyenoord had the mental durability to match the ability they had shown since their 8-2 defeat in Amsterdam.
Wow.
So it's amazing turnaround. Feyenoord now kind of cooking on gas.
Yeah.
Stanley Brad's come in. It's given them that structure and the ability for Cruyff to just do what he wants. And if you go and watch this second goal on YouTube, Cruyff hammers it home. He's only about 10 yards out and he absolutely spanks it. And you can see just the passion, the fury, the rage leaving his body, which is absolutely amazing. So Feyenoord would also go on to knock Ajax out of the Dutch Cup after a replay for them to progress out into the last 16.
Nice.
So Feyenoord are getting their revenge, and this fourth best team, so I guess it's a bit like Spurs nowadays, just going on this absolute rampage where the season before they'd been nowhere. And the season before that, they'd be nowhere. I think they won they won a cup about 3 years previously.
Yeah.
But Cruyff has single-handedly, through his pure revenge, dragged them into
incredible
into contention. So towards the end of the season, almost exactly a year after Ajax let him go. So as I mentioned, Feyenoord knocked Ajax out of the cup, and then they would go on to win the KNVB Cup final at home soil at De Kuip to clinch their first cup victory. That's it, in 5 years, not 3 years. So. Right. Cruyff inspires them to go and beat Fortuna Sittard. They win the cup. And then only 4 days later, May the 5th, almost exactly a year to the day that Ajax let Cruyff go, they sealed the League Cup win by beating Willem Twee. Cruyff scores in the 13th minute, and Cruyff is absolutely unplayable. It is a parade. He goes on, I think they win 5-1, I think is the game, and Feyenoord fans are about 3 or 4 minutes before full time are crowding around the edge of the pitch, just waiting for the referee's whistle to come and pitch invade. And when they do, it is Cruyff that they lift onto their shoulders, flinging him into the air. And they would go on to win only their third cup and league double in their history, all under Cruyff's stewardship.
Daar is Cruyff zelf met de gelijkmaker. Schrijvers is uitgespeeld. Hoe mooier kan het? In zijn laatste wedstrijd hier in de Kuip, Johan Cruyff scoort zijn 11e competitiedoelpunt voor Feyenoord.
So Cruyff's season.
He must have been smug as you like.
After. Yeah, he was proved right. So he went on TV. I forgot to mention this actually, where we were talking about the media. Yeah. He went on TV after the 8-2 loss to Ajax right near the start of the season, saying they would go on to win the league.
Wow.
So he went on to the Dutch match of the day.
Doing that now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's the equivalent of when Man United beat Arsenal 8-2. It's the idea that like. I'm trying to think who was playing in that day.
Lauren.
Yeah, Lauren, like, coming out and being like, we're going to win the league.
Yeah.
We're going on to win the league now. It was absolutely astounding.
Yeah.
No. And he went on with Arda Moss, the manager, the Ajax manager that had let him go and he'd vowed to swear revenge. So it was a little bit like, was it Dom Revy and Clough?
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
When they went on
the
chat show to talk. So it was a little bit like that, where Cruyff was completely unapologetic. And people thought, okay, this is a guy like raging against the dying of the light. Just go with a bit of dignity, Johan.
Yeah.
Like, you've just been spanked. Feyenoord aren't going to do anything.
Yeah.
Just leave with a bit of dignity. But with his final year, he managed to be successful. So a league and cup double for Feyenoord. And despite his relatively advanced age, Cruyff played all league matches that season except for one. And because of his performance on the field, he was voted as Dutch Footballer of the Year for the fifth time.
Wow.
And like I said, Ruud Gullit got the Players Player of the Year. So
wow. And he retired then, Cruyff?
He retired. Right. He went out. It was a mic drop. That was his final season professional football. He would obviously go on to manage Ajax, so that relationship was never damaged beyond repair.
Yeah.
He went on to be a very good manager for them and then went on to manage Barcelona as well. But really, it's Johan Cruyff just knowing who he is, his ability, and managing against the dying of the light to pull out one more historic, not just for him, but for the club that he represented.
Incredible.
Season.
Incredible.
And you try and think of a player that would be able to unite two rival clubs that loved them.
Yeah,
like both clubs love Johan Cruyff, and you just can't imagine it. Like you said, when Figo went from Barcelona to Real Madrid, Barcelona like hate him. His name is mud now. You think of other players, Laudrup a little bit when he went from Real to Barca and Barca to Real, but even then, he was never like accepted or loved. There wasn't a warmth with Laudrup like there was with Johan Cruyff.
Yeah,
but yeah, he went on to prove everybody wrong, and that's everything for today.
Fantastic.
So, I hope you join us next week as we look at another final day for an icon.